Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. There's some mad technical difficulties going on with Skype that has been happening for the last week, apparently, that I've been taken off, and we are doing this via speakerphone, so I can keep my hands free. Okay, now, my very special guest, if I recall correctly, should be on the line there as well. What the heck is her name? Dr. Manjua Samantha Lawton, I think. Are you there?
Hi.
All right, well, we've got you there. Would you introduce yourself and let us know your websites and such?
Hi, I'm, the long name is Dr. Manjua Samantha Lawton, that's a hyphenated surname, but just call me Manjua. And what's easy to remember is punkscience.com. That's all one word, punkscience.com. So I'm sometimes called the Punk Science Lady. That's one of my nicknames.
What exactly is punk science?
How long have you got?
Specifically, we have 2 hours.
Well, punk science, because, I mean, there's a lot of, as you know, there's a lot of stuff that's told to us that's sort of fed to us as orthodox science, you know. And I was looking at all this, and my background is I'm a medical doctor, and I could see through what people were being fed and realize that there was a whole load of stuff that people never get to hear about. And that's the connection between what we call science, like the cutting-edge physics. And that was really starting to look like the ancient esoteric wisdom, you know. We talked about consciousness and, you know, sort of non-local effects and all of these things. And but I knew that the establishment wasn't gonna accept all this. So it's punk science. It's out of the box. It's radical thinking. You know, it's there on the page, you know, so I call my book Punk Science because, you know, the orthodoxy aren't going to like it, but, you know, there it is.
Like rebellion science.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So we're not going to expect you to put razor blades on your arms and go dance around in a mosh pit, are you?
No, not tonight. Don't feel like it. I have been in a mosh pit before, believe me.
I'm sure we will have. Now, speaking of punk science and such, because this is actually a topic that's of great interest to me, because I've met so many educated people, so many doctors, so many scientists, who think that all the other doctors and scientists are completely crazy and unthinking morons, which is aghast to most of the public who think, if I've got a problem, go see a doctor who will give me a drug.
Yeah,
totally.
There's a growing number of people. I would say it's still the minority, but you know, there's a lot of people sort of unhappy within the sort of medical profession itself. But I mean, that's why I started out. I really started to look and see that doctors who were around me really didn't know much about physics. So their world really stops at the molecule. You know, they don't look any deeper. So that's all they're thinking about. Does this molecule, which is a drug, fit that molecule in the body? And if so, all well and good. And that's all they're thinking about. But there's just so much more to that. In orthodox science itself, because, of course, we've had quantum physics for almost a century now, which looks much deeper to the atom even, and tells us that reality is not like that at all. It's not solid. But that just doesn't filter through to most doctors. And although some scientists know about it, it's like, have you ever heard of the phrase, shut up and calculate? You know, they just sort of, that's the day job. They go home and then they don't think about what it all means.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the situation. So it's really, punk science really is kind of like describing a movement of punk scientists around the world that have been talking about it for quite a few years. We're actually making punk science into a movie at the moment. Myself and my partner we've been around the world. We went to New Zealand. I spoke at New Zealand a couple of years ago, and we interviewed Amit Goswami there. We've been interviewing all sorts of people around the world, you know, who are really, you know, the punks, the rebels who are in the system and just sort of seen and gone, hey, you know, there's just so much more to reality than this that you know, we're telling the public, and, you know, we're actually, that it's all to do with funding at the end of the day, you know, what gets funded. And if you don't do what's in the sort of straitjacket, I've definitely spoken to physicists who've been warned that if they don't stick to what they're told to do, then they're going to lose their jobs.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of threat out there, and I was wondering as well, what happens to a doctor if you're young, super intelligent, getting straight A's and things of that nature, which you do need to, or at least in New Zealand you do, in order to get into medical school in the first place. What motivates them to get into those fields, or in any field, really, for that matter, of a scientific nature that requires a lot of cognitive ability? What motivates them to get into it, and conversely, how do they lose their motivation once they're in there?
So you're asking, like, why do intelligent young people then just lose their interest in science?
After they've kind of studied for near on a decade and gotten into it, and then they just kind of go, I don't really care anymore, though. The doctors stop reading the resource materials, the other scientists stop caring as well. You know, basically they don't want to stay up to date. They're simply there for the 9-to-5 sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because when obviously I studied and got good grades in school, but just as things were getting interesting, just as they were talking about quantum physics, you know, so I studied physics and chemistry at the age of 18, they stopped telling us. They go, well, then you get into quantum physics and that's too complicated for you. So, you know, I was left, and a lot of my colleagues at medical students were left with that picture that everything was solid, which just isn't the case in physics, not been the case for a long time. And then you get into med school and the big shock happens, because what you were doing in England, we call it A-levels, where, you know, you're sitting for sort of 17, 18 years old to get into university, and you're right, to get into med school, you have to sort of get pretty high grades. What we're doing an entire year or term, you know, we were doing in 1 hour's lecture, and that's the onslaught that happens to you in med school, and, you know, the workload is so much, and all it is repetition. You're not thinking about what you're learning, really. You're just learning facts and regurgitating them. And then you get an exam every few weeks, and you just, it's, you know, survival from one exam to another. And you're just thinking about getting through those exams, which are designed to actually weed out, you know, a certain percentage of students anyway. So, I mean, I was there. I was really thinking in terms of orthodoxy. I wasn't interested in anything like that. But I was also interested in fitness. So here I was. I was down from northern England, a little place, village in northern England. I came down to London to study. We did actually have a sort of family place in London, so I was sort of familiar with the area. And I was in one of the top London medical schools in the early 90s. And I got there. This is what, you know, my whole family had been focused on. Both my parents are doctors. My grandfather was a doctor. All my cousins are doctors. And I got there, and I was like, oh, I'm 18. I got my dream. I'm in med school. This ain't right for me. It just felt so wrong. So luckily for me, somebody signed me up for a yoga class. You know how when you get to college and everybody sort of, you know, signed you up for different clubs? And you've got to understand, I was a total skeptic at that point, a total skeptic. And I walked into this yoga class thinking I was going to do some stretches. And I ended up with a Kundalini experience. I don't know if you know what that is.
It's a type of pasta, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's a type of pasta, isn't it?
I've never heard it being described like that. But, yeah, sometimes pasta comes in spirals. So, you know, and the spiral absolutely has to do with Kundalini. So it's a type of energy. I'd never heard of this. I was a complete skeptic. Richard Dawkins was like my idol, which is ironic because I ended up on TV with him later. But, you know, so I, you know, ended up with this energy going through me, and I had, you know, this sudden awakening. So at 18 years old, in med school in London for the first few weeks, and suddenly the light was switched on, and I saw everything in a completely different way. I saw, you know, everything is connected and, you know, the things that the ancients have been talking about for a long time. This is someone who is a complete skeptic who saw all that was nonsense before. So I've been on both sides, you know. I know what it is like to look at people and think, what are they talking about? Why are they so nuts, you know? And I've also been called nuts myself. So I've been, you know, both parts of it. So I went through the whole med school with this kind of growing awareness, and I realized that, you know, you have to bring the two together. You have to bring science and spirit together in order to move forward. And initially I set out to help patients. That's what I was aiming to do, but I ended up doing a lot more than I bargained for, really. I ended up finding a lot more. I don't know if you know about my theories about black holes, and we can talk about that later if you want.
Well, why not now?
So, yeah, I set out to just to provide a framework, a really simple framework that was contemporary, that people were going to relate to, that was looking at the science of consciousness. I know you've discussed that with Anthony Peake on this show before, looking at how quantum physics and consciousness are related. Just make it really easy, make it really funky, and, you know, sort of easy to understand. And I got to writing the book, and in the meantime, my whole world changed around. You know, when you actually set out to do something and it actually happens, you know, sometimes in order to get there, get on the path, when you step on the path, the universe responds, and the whole universe did. So it ended up completely changing my life. I left medicine. This is years after, obviously, I became qualified as a doctor, and I've been studying these subjects all this time. And I ended up really getting into the subject of black holes. And so that led to a whole new theory of black holes because, you know, we're often told that black holes are actually destructive. I don't know if you've sort of read anything into black holes at all.
Well, I think black holes are essentially like a celestial psychopath. They just suck you in and crush you.
Yeah, that's what we're told, you know. And so what happened was I was studying the actual data from black holes, and it actually was the complete opposite. When we actually look at black holes with our telescope, the actual evidence shows that it's a complete opposite. There's actually so much light and radiation coming out of black holes. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't.
No, so this has been going on fairly recently, so it's not really filtered down to the public yet, because, you know, when they get so entrenched in a theory, they don't really want to let go of it.
Well, then they lose their credibility. It's like, oh, I've been preaching BS for 10 years. Nobody will ever trust me again. Have you heard of the scientist who cried wolf?
Exactly. Exactly. It's like they don't really want to, because, you know, there's funding and everything embedded in the system now. So they're so entrenched, they can't really go from there. Even when the evidence comes up that black holes are not destructive, they've actually got loads of radiation, they're coming up with all sorts of strange theories to explain this, which is that, you know, as the stuff goes down the plug hole, the black holes actually burp on their food. I mean, that is, if you actually go and Google that, you'll find that black holes actually burp on their food. You know, just have a look, you know. So they're doing all these amazing contortions, you know, to try and stick with their theories in the face of the evidence.
It's like Cirque du Science.
Yeah. It's like Ptolemy's epicycles all over again. Whenever they find something, you know, they always say things that just completely surprises them, like antimatter coming out of thunderstorms, which we can go into later, but I mean, you know, that's one thing. They sort of go, oh, yeah, we were expecting that, actually. We had to, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. It's like, yeah, right. And then they do this, like, convoluted explanation as to why that's happening. So, you know, that theory just doesn't work in the face of the evidence. But at the moment, they're not ready to give up their cherished beliefs, which is what they are, their beliefs. But when the evidence actually shows to the contrary, they can't really let go of it, which is why I think people like me, it's like, you know, there's a few people working on black hole theories being creative. At the moment, but I think that's why it's come. So, you know, I suddenly had a very sort of big flash of insight, and I realized that black holes are actually the creative hubs of the universe. And what happens is most of them exist beyond the... Sorry?
Oh, we're coming to a break now, unfortunately. Oh, wait, hold on. No, we're having some technical difficulties, which means we don't have no break coming, which means you can continue.
Okay. Basically what I realized in this sort of insight is that black holes are actually creative. That actually most of them, have you heard of dark matter or dark energy?
No, but I heard that the Massive Hadron Collider that they built like for $9 billion or something found a new type of a matter that kind of appeared and then disappeared and that they can't do anything with, and they called it doesn't matter.
I think there's a lot of that in science. So don't get me started on the LHC. I'll go on all night. But anyway, you don't need big, you know, colliders and this sort of thing to do good science. What's missing is they can't put the pieces together. So if they looked at the data and understood the data, they wouldn't need these expensive machines if they had the insight to actually see the patterns. So what I saw was the patterns in the data, and I suddenly realized what the pattern was. And then what you have to understand is that the speed of light isn't the speed limit of the universe. That's the first thing. And, you know, so actually most of the universe actually exists beyond the speed of light. That's why 98% of the universe is actually missing. We don't know what it's made of. You know, 98% of the universe is dark matter and dark energy.
Mm.
Well, you know, what we're made of is the 0.3% that is the stars and everything like that. 0.3%. You know, your body, everything that's physical you see around you. So what I realize is what that is stuff that's actually beyond the speed of light. And this is actually some orthodox scientists who actually say this too. And even Einstein... himself actually said that the speed of light isn't the speed limit of the universe. So what I realised is when you go beyond the speed of light, it's actually super bright. It's actually a different type of light that's in higher dimensions. And what black holes do is they're actually the creative force that brings this light from higher dimensions into our dimension below the speed of light. So what happens when the light gets to the edge of our dimension, something I'm now calling the perception horizon because that's a limitation of our perceptions, not the limitation of the universe, is you get the particle of light splitting into a particle of matter and a particle of antimatter. Not a particle of don't matter, but you can have that if you want. And so a particle of matter. And this happens at the speed of light. And guess what? This is what we see in our telescopes. We see electrons coming out of black holes at the speed of light. And the astrophysicists do not know why this is happening.
What does it mean?
What does it mean? Well, it means they've got everything the wrong way around. It means they've got absolutely everything the wrong way around. Instead of black holes being destructive, you know, if black holes were destructive, why would they be at the center of every galaxy? And why would there be a direct correlation between the size of the black hole at the center of the galaxy and the size of the galaxy?
Well, I was wondering about this as well. Most things that I've learned in my life to be true have turned out to be the exact opposite. Why should this be any different?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, as I said, they're so invested in the old paradigm that they keep doing contortions even in the face of all this evidence. So the other thing that happens at the black hole that I'm putting forward is that it kind of breathes. At the edge of the black hole, the matter and the antimatter that split from the light, the photon, they combine again, and they form light in the form of gamma ray bursts. Now, we see these gamma ray bursts all over the sky. And over 50 years now, we've been trying to figure out what is creating these gamma ray bursts. Well, I'm saying that they're actually coming from the breathing process of black holes. And you see, sorry to say this, but, you know, the physicists only understand things that are violent. They only understand gobbling black holes, eating black holes, you know, explosions. What they don't understand, and you can look this up and see that this is absolutely puzzled to them, what they don't understand is that this is a breathing process that's actually sometimes producing the matter and antimatter, sometimes producing the gamma rays. Now, what an explosion should look like in their charts is that you have this huge burst of gamma rays and then they die away. That's what an explosion would look like. But you don't. You actually get these oscillations. And they can't understand why that's happening because their paradigm is completely wrong. Instead of thinking of explosions, the actual edge of a black hole is just breathing one way or the other. And sometimes it's producing matter and antimatter. That's when we see the X-rays and the antimatter coming out. And then sometimes it's producing gamma rays, and that's when we see the gamma ray burst. And because it's breathing between the two, that's why we get the results that we do. But they look at the data, and they can't understand it, so they put it to one side, and they go, okay, we're sticking to our old violent universe paradigm, even though there's no evidence that nobody's ever seen a black hole gobbling another black hole. But what we do see is loads of gamma ray bursts everywhere. So you know what I mean? That they're not really letting go of their very cherished ideas, but this is the theory that I'm putting forward. So I've been speaking about it for over 10 years now.
Has any form of planetary or star-like body ever emerged from a black hole? Like they breathe, do they give birth?
Absolutely. You've got it absolutely right. One of the other puzzles is that they've seen things called hypervelocity stars. And from our own galaxy being ejected out at very, very high speeds, The other thing that they've seen of, has absolutely puzzled them, because they don't understand black holes are given birth. The Mayan people used to call the center of the galaxy the cosmic mother, you know, and so did the Gnostics, you know. So this is really rediscovered knowledge, you know, with the modern telescope data that we've got. We're actually going back to ancient knowledge. So what you can actually see just 1 light-year away from the center of the Milky Way are blue stars. Now, blue stars are new stars. So you can see new stars being created at the center of the galaxy, so near the black hole at the center of the galaxy. Now, if black holes were destructive, this would make no sense. You know, so black holes are creative, and they also create two what's called bipolar jets. Now, whenever you see a galaxy, you know there's kind of like a spiral around the center, do you know, where you see a lot of spiral galaxies? Now, if you can imagine that there's like two sort of jets coming out, they're actually going at right angles to the disk, as it were. So they're called bipolar jets. There's nothing to do with manic depression, in case you're wondering about that. Now, what's really, really interesting is that the black hole, I call it a black hole principle, because it doesn't just end there. What I'm saying is that the same pattern goes throughout all of reality. So you see this same pattern happening in planets, in stars. Our sun gives these coronal mass ejections, which are electrons at the speed of light, antimatter, matter cycling. You know, it's the same pattern. Sunspots, it's black holes on black holes. Sunspots are mini black holes. Guess what? They eject electrons. You know, you've got all the planets that are giving out ejections. You've got, you know, the same sort of patterns. You can see these bipolar jets around new stars, around old stars. Nobody knows why they're doing this, but it totally fits with the black hole principle. Everything at every level, even atoms, down to atoms. What do we know about atoms? They breathe up and down. They eject. They have electrons and positrons, and matter and antimatter flip. You know, when we see things in a different way, we see that they actually, nature just has one pattern at every single level, just expressing itself at different levels. It's actually quite simple.
Yeah, I always find that very funny as well. You know, you ask somebody, how do you know an atom looks like a ball? And they go, oh, well, I've seen a photo of it. Really? How did they zoom in that far in order to get a photo of an atom?
Oh, no, that's not fun. And in any case, it's a load of empty space. You know, it's a load of nothing, you know. Everybody knows that. You can't really, there's nothing to photograph. It's information.
They seem to be like simple building blocks that are infinitesimal, and what was I going to say here? Oh yeah. The human body is very similar to this to the universe in a lot of ways. Like the brain cell structure, I think, looks very much like the structure of the universe, kind of thing. Like if you were pull back and take a picture of a brain cell or a picture of the universe, they'd match up and look very aligned. Also, cells are all built up of other cells, and all those other little cells that build them up are also built of other cells. So it's, and so on and so forth, infinitely down the chain. And my contention is that life is an infinite sort of spectrum, just by matter of size. So whatever our subjective experience is, you know, I'm subjectively Vinnie Eastwood. You're subjectively Manja, and we're subjectively here having a conversation. Yet there's a whole bunch of cells within our bodies that also have their own consciousness and maybe even self-actualization, or who knows. And thus the universe is very, very similar in such a way too. It's infinite in scale, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's these beautiful pictures that people have done showing the similarity between neurons and structures out in space. And you know, one of the beautiful things that binds us all together is phi ratio. You know, you can just even see that in our own bodies. You know, the fact that our dimensions actually reflect that. And, you know, the brain also, you know, one of the things ideas I'm putting forward is that epilepsy might be a sort of black hole discharge of the parietal lobes of the brain. So when you have an epileptic, somebody has an epileptic fit, they release a load of electrons, just as in a black hole. So, and we've, you know, got evidence to show that epileptic fits are actually linked to solar activity. So that's the other thing about it. Everything, absolutely everything, is breathing in and out. Everything is linked. So, you know, something that is, and everything has infinity at the center, like you're saying. It's this infinite universe. Every single black hole is producing light from infinity. And the infinity at the center of every black hole, whether it be out in space in the center of a galaxy, whether it be in our own atoms or our chakras, you know, the idea of chakras is, are they black holes, you know? So, you know, something that's so small, this is the same infinity. We're all connected. You know, we have this, like you're saying, a subjective experience that we're separate. But, you know, that same infinity is just is everywhere. It's expressing itself through this one principle in myriads and myriads and myriads of different ways. But if you look closely and look again at all the data, and I'm talking about hard scientific data here, I'm talking about telescopes that are picking up the ejections that are coming out of the sun, the actual you know, composition of the sun. We thought we knew what was going on. We thought it was this big, you know, hydrogen bomb, effectively, but it's not. The actual composition of the sun, recently they've had to throw their hands up and say, you know, it's got too much oxygen. The sun has got too much. We don't know the chemical composition of the sun. And if we don't know that, we don't know the first thing about the sun. These are scientists. These are actual orthodox scientists who are saying, we actually don't know. It doesn't get translated to the public because too much, because they want to keep this mystique that they know what's going on. But actually, sometimes it...
Well, this sounds like... It sounds like somebody is a massive religious preacher of an obscure religion, and people suddenly find out that he's a fraud, and he keeps it from his congregation so he can keep defrauding them.
And keep the money as well. I mean, I have to say some people are getting this out. There was actually a program on the BBC about 2 years ago that said, what if everything we know about the universe is wrong? Because the data is so overwhelming now that, you know, the microwave data from the that was supposed to be from the Big Bang 15 billion years ago, it's just confirmed that actually there's alignment that corresponds to structures today. There shouldn't be. You know, these microwaves, guess what? There's microwaves coming out of our Milky Way. Could these microwaves, the background microwave data, not be something from 15 billion years ago? You know, the party's over, nothing's happening, but from a continuous creation process that's happening in every moment. Therefore, there are alignments with current structures, and that is in the data. You know, so our ideas of the universe, when we actually go to prove them, are being disproved. And when they're disproved, it's like they look at the data in disbelief. By the way, they call this alignment the axis of evil.
What are they going to do? Try and invade it?
Exactly. They call it that because, you know, they can't get rid of it. They've tried to, you know, first of all, nobody believed it. And then they, you know, said that the scientists had discovered it. I can actually make predictions with this theory that have come true. I've made predictions in my book and in my papers, and then NASA's gone out and explored something, and they found the evidence that what I predicted a few years before was actually true. So, for example, you know, the same principle happens on our planet too. You know, it sounds crazy, we're sitting on a black hole, but, you know, actually there's so much evidence for... the black hole activity on this planet is quite amazing.
What do you mean? Do you mean Earth is like a black hole? Like it's got a black hole inside it or something?
Yeah. If you stop thinking about Earth as of black holes as destructive, and realize that black holes are actually it's actually a process of a dynamic creation. You start to think of things differently. So our Earth and the Earth's upper atmosphere, we started to see things called terrestrial gamma ray flashes. Once we got, you know, the satellites that were above the clouds, they started to notice that every time there was a thunderstorm, they would see things that were really, really bright. And so different types of lightning, different... Now, what they found as well is gamma ray flashes, gamma ray bursts, that are just as powerful. This is in an Earth's upper atmosphere, just as powerful as in black holes out in space. Amazing, isn't it? So we've got the same things happening in thunderstorms. Now, the other thing that comes out of thunderstorms, which you probably know about, is lightning. Now, lightning are fast-moving electrons. And just as in the black hole principle, now the black hole principle, if I, you know, one of the features is it's breathing between gamma ray bursts and fast-moving electrons and antimatter. Now, when I wrote my book, we had found the gamma ray bursts and we found the electrons. It's called lightning. Now, people have done some experiments to, you know, the way that we're told lightning is created is we're told it's a build-up of static electricity in clouds. People have done some experiments, and actually some people have lost their lives putting, you know, kites into a thunderstorm. Now, you can imagine that's quite a dangerous thing to do, to try and measure the build-up of electricity. It's nowhere near enough to create a lightning bolt. Yet they tell the public that this is how lightning is created, even though the experiments themselves have disproved this. So they don't really know how lightning is created. Now, if you look at the black hole principle, we would predict gamma ray flashes, we predict fast-moving electrons at almost the speed of light, which is what lightning is. Now, the other thing that we predict is antimatter. Now, 2010, NASA finally went up to investigate gamma ray bursts, and to their absolute surprise, they found the signature of antimatter coming out of thunderstorms associated with terrestrial gamma ray flashes. This is just one of the predictions that this theory has made. You know, nobody knew that antimatter was coming out of thunderstorms when I first wrote the theory, you know, but it was something that was predictable, because if you know the simple pattern, you can start predicting all sorts of things. So the Earth itself has gotten lots of signs of this black hole dynamo activity. From the center of the planet to actually the Earth's upper atmosphere.
All right, well, coming to break the first time in this hour, we have Dr. Mangia for an entire hour up as well. So, ladies, just you stay there and listen to the wonderful commercials we have. And we'll be right back after them. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is great for the economy, because everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Dr. Mangia. Welcome back.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were we talking about, the black hole in the centre of the Earth, like... The whole Gaia complex, you know, the Earth Mother and the Greek myths about how Gaia just sort of spit out everything, is that something that you've kind of come to wonder about, is how myths and legends actually seem to have a scientific basis behind them? They're just a little bit obscure?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my new book is... You know, in a broader picture, my new book is really going to go into looking at ancient people and how they were writing about, you know, the Anunnaki and all these different beings, which I think are multidimensional beings. And so, you know, even from that to, you know, the whole black hole principle was there in the Gnostic texts, and as I said, the Mayan people actually would speak of the center of the galaxy as the Great Mother. Now, this is before we've had the evidence that actually shows that this is the case. How did they know that, for example, the Gnostic text says that the goddess Sophia fell from the center of the galaxy. She swirled around. She fell through the cosmic bound, and then she created this world. Now, that sounds hugely like the process of light coming from the center of the galaxy, the black hole, swirling around. You know, instead of an accretion disk, it's really a creation disk, going through what I call the perception horizon, which is at the speed of light, and then coming into our world. It's the same process. So they were talking about goddesses, and now we're talking about particle physics. That's the only difference. It's pretty amazing what's been there before.
Have you ever heard of the game, the children's game Chinese Whispers, where you whisper one thing into one person's ear, and then they'll whisper that, they'll try and remember what you said, and they whisper it into the next person's ear, and by the time you get to the 10th person, it's something completely different?
Yeah, definitely played that one.
Yeah, so is that basically what we're going on here? We're doing some kind of scientific, mythological Chinese whispers through the ages?
Well, you know, what's really interesting is, as I'm doing my research, it's not so much how much we've lost through that process, translation process, how much people have actually kept it going. That's what really is extraordinary. I mean, you know, sometimes oral tradition can last, you know, hundreds, if not we don't know, but I mean, it could have even lasted thousands of years. And people repeat things. And there's actually a study, you can't really find the paper now, but I saw an anthropologist actually studied the Kurdish people, and she was looking at how they kept the oral tradition. And actually, she found that through generations, people will keep the same story going through the chanting and song rather than just speaking. They would keep it like word perfect generation after generation, which is quite amazing. You know, so it's actually what surprising me is actually just how well kept some of these stories are. But if it method away from consciousness, away from spirit, and what do we find? We probe deeper into the universe, and what do we get? At the heart of every atom is information that's interacting with our consciousness, to have some people conclude that consciousness is fundamental to reality. And then we get relativity, which says that it depends on your perspective as to what the universe, how the universe behaves, which is pretty amazing, again, linked to consciousness. And we get all this data, which actually tells us that the universe is not at all what we thought it was. You know, for the data that's coming out now is saying axis of evil is true. Big Bang didn't happen. You have to throw everything out. So the more that we're going deeper, we're using the scientific method, the more that we're coming back to these concepts that have been in ancient mysticism for thousands of years, which is really, really quite exciting.
Well, the problem with discovery is that the people whose careers are based upon that discovery not being made get really angry, jealous, and defensive, and can sometimes destroy your entire life. Have you ever had any of these people try to come after you or discredit you or the organizations what you're talking about?
Oh, yes, yeah. I've had the entire medical profession. It was quite a strange thing that happened to me, because it was my personal life and my professional life came together. And about just over 10 years ago, I was working as a medical general practitioner, and I was married to a general practitioner, and who was going one way. He was going into the pharmaceutical industry, kind of thing. And the marriage came to an end. And so we split. And so that wasn't the end of the story, though, because he started to tell my parents, who were both doctors as well, that I'd lost it. That, you know, as I said, I'm a mystic. I was actually a trained healer as well. So I was actually seeing people on the side of my medical practice. I wasn't doing healing. It sounds strange, but I wasn't doing healing in my medical practice, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I was actually doing orthodox medicine as a GP, and then I'd see people as a trained holistic practitioner on the side. So, you know, extraordinary things were happening in my practice, like shape-shifting and, you know, crazy things. And I would tell my husband about this, and, you know, little did I know he was actually taking notes. And, you know, and I didn't know quite, you know, how way out it sounded to him. And so when we actually divorced, he told my parents that I was, you know, unstable and this and that. And they insisted that I have a mental health check. And I ended up having being referred to the General Medical Council of England, and who were just really, you know, nasty piece of work. And most of the psychiatrists who saw me just said, you're fine, you're actually completely normal. And there was just one psychiatrist who just seemed to have it in for me and had already made up her mind as to, you know, that I was, had, you know, bipolar, whatever. And her initial assessment was that I had bipolar disorder. So I was the whole time of this time, I was told not to work. So I lost my house. I had to quit my job because I didn't want to, you know, say that I'd, because I wasn't ill, you know, so I didn't want to go on sick leave. They forced me to go on sick leave. I lost absolutely everything, you know, so my, I just got divorced as well. So I really got to rock bottom, and they eventually said to me, we can't find anything wrong with you, but there must be something in you know, what your ex-husband has said. He went into my computer and he got all my stuff about David Icke and reptilians and all this sort of stuff and showed it to them. So I was in this strange situation of, you know, the psychiatrist asking me, do you think that people are going to come after you? And I'm going, what do you think is happening right now, you know? And it was this bizarre thing. But so in the end, they said, we can't find anything wrong with you, but we're going to monitor you. If you go for any job, you have to tell them that you're under psychiatric surveillance. You can't leave the country. You can't do this. If we tell you to take drugs, you're going to have to take drugs, otherwise you can't work. And you know what? I just knew what I had to do. And it was really hard after all that training, but I quit the medical profession. And it's been the most liberating experience. It's been completely frightening, like, how am I going to pay my bills? But, you know, ever since then, in you know, I've just been, the universe has supported me in extraordinary ways. But I've had what I've needed, and I've made a tremendous sacrifice to get this book out, get Punk Science out, and then I wrote my story with the second book, The Genius Groove. And, yeah, absolutely. But now if people... I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Dublin. I was at a conference in Dublin, and it was a European Commission conference with Angela Merkel and... You know, all these sort of people for heads of state and ex-heads of state. It's a long story how I got there, but it was a friend of my partner's was sort of organizing this. They met like many years ago, and he invited me to speak. Very unusual conference for the sort of thing that I normally do. And one of the physicists asked me when he found out after my presentation what I was about. He actually said publicly they shouldn't have been invited to speak there and that people like me should be banned. So I still get that. And but you know what? The majority of people have been speaking around the world for 10 years now, over 10 years. You know, have just welcomed me and welcomed these ideas, and a very minority of people who are against it.
Right. Well, we're coming to another break now. We've got you for another whole hour. This is quite an interesting conversation because it's really about the nature of the universe and how science and mysticism really are becoming one through just simple, logical deduction study of what's actually there, what's actually fact. And I found that what's funny about this all is, as I mentioned before, everything you think you know winds up being proven wrong at some point. And I think that's probably the reason why I no longer have any rigidly held beliefs. Because I know that they can change at any point with some sufficient evidence. We'll be right back, folks, after the break, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and people who stick to wrong beliefs, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. My very special guest is Dr. Mangere, Samantha-Lawton. It's a hyphenated name. Welcome back.
Hi.
Okay, hi. Where were we?
Wherever you want to be.
Well, I guess the whole concept of trauma and how it teaches you something. What did these really nasty experiences of losing your marriage and your home and basically your entire career path and changing it? Because this was the question that I wanted to ask most people who have an established viewpoint of something. When was the last time that your worldview was radically shifted? And you could ask this to any politician, any scientist or doctor, and for them they'd have to think about it and go, man, it's actually been quite a long time. You haven't grown up much then, have you? So what about yourself? When was the last time that your full-on reality just kind of shifted? For me, I hope that it happens every couple of months.
Yeah, I think I'm a Scorpio, so I think you have to really let go. You know, I'm really into this sort of death and rebirth kind of thing. And I think that's a very Scorpio thing. But, I mean, it should happen. And if you know where you are, then you don't know anything. I mean, I have my beliefs challenged all the time. I'm always learning. And yeah, I mean, I just get an insight and I go, wow. And it's wonderful when you can't figure something out in your life because you know that you're growing, like something is actually happening. And, whenever you get to a point where you go, I've got it all worked out, blah, 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 it all changes again. I know what you're saying. It's like some people live in a parallel reality and they have the same sort of life and the same job. I see some people from my school maybe and they have got the same sort of, they live in the same town and I don't know how they do it. It's just, you know, for me every few years, you know, I make a big change in my life, definitely. It just seems to happen. And every day I'm getting new insights. So yeah, absolutely. The big one for me was 10 years ago. But in a way, you know, that the really big one was 1992 because I went from a total materialist to a mystic overnight. I mean, it was literally overnight. And so I was learning a lot of things that that prepared me for the big loss of career and everything. I was really gaining a lot of personal development tools, a lot of... So I think you're only given what you can handle. So for a lot of doctors who have actually left my life since then, you know, they couldn't handle it. Any, you know, doctor friends just couldn't imagine themselves losing their license. And, I mean, I quit. I wasn't struck off. I just want to emphasize that. So I quit my license. I actually told them that I didn't want it anymore and they could go stop it. And so a lot of doctors just couldn't imagine themselves stepping out of the box like that. But because I already had, you know, a robust emotional system of actually how to handle myself and how to grow and other interests as well, I got out of that. It was very, very difficult. I'm not going to say it was a breeze, but because I already knew certain things about life, that, you know, nothing happens by accident. Everything that happens in your life is a choice at some level. A choice, as it is in the black hole paradigm, it's beyond the speed of light. You're choosing beyond the speed of light at all times what happens in your life. Some people call it the higher self. So because I already knew that, even when they were... I mean, I had a knock on my doorstep. Knock on my door, and on my doorstep there was a psychiatrist and a GP, ironically a GP that I used to work with, I trained alongside, coming to section me. That's what happened. And so even when that was happening, and how traumatic was that, they actually came and they said, we can't see anything wrong with you, but your parents and your ex-husband are saying that you've got some really strange ideas. I mean, stuff about David Icke and the reptilians and everything like that came up. It was really, really quite comical if you think about it. You know, I'm sitting in a medical office with a general medical counsel talking about reptilians. And it was, he's now a friend of mine, David, and I haven't actually told him that that's happened. But, you know, so, yeah, so I was getting this experience, but in the moment, I knew that there was a higher picture happening and that I wasn't in the right career. It was paying my bills, but it wasn't in the right career, that there was something, a bigger picture unfolding. And if I didn't know that in the moment, I think, you know, like a lot of doctors who go through general medical counsel, sort of investigation or medical counsel investigations for whatever country you're in, there's different names. A lot of doctors actually commit suicide even before they're hearing, even if they're innocent of everything. I want to emphasize that as well. I did not have a single complaint about me professionally. It was purely my personal life, and then worried that I, because I have spiritual experiences, that I was actually mentally unstable. There was this is a big shock to my colleagues because I behaved completely professionally at work. There was not a single patient complaint, not a single colleague complaint. I kept my spiritual life secret. I went to work and I did my GP job, paid my bills with that. I was actually a doctor at the holistic at the Bristol Cancer Help Centre. It's now called the Penny Bronze Centre. I was working as a holistic doctor there, and I was working as a healer. So I was doing all of these things, juggling them all, and keeping them very separate: my orthodox work and my sort of holistic work. And so when it was happening, because you know, almost like I'd been prepared by the universe. I got through it where I think a lot of people wouldn't have got through such an experience, and people don't. People do sort of, you know, end up committing suicide for something like that. And so that really helped. And so when I've been through that, and I'm starting to say, obviously it's hurt very much, a betrayal from my family and everything. It's taken a long time to get over all these things. But now I'm truly saying it was the best thing that happened to me. The world opened up, you know, immediately I started speaking around the world. I've been on BBC TV, Channel 4, you know, I've been around the world, invited to conferences and, you know, speaking to more interesting people like you. You know, I met, met the scientists that I started studying. I've met them. I've spoken alongside them. I've got a wonderful new partner now who's totally into all of these same sort of stuff. It's just really, for me now, I can look back and go, you know, this is really the best thing that happened. And it freed me. I'm not in the system. I totally stepped out of the system. And you know, I can I can say so much more than when I was in the system. So maybe that was the point, you know.
Evan, don't you find that really funny, is that the worst things that happen to you in your life often turn out to actually be the best things to have ever happened to you?
Oh, people call it the dark night of the soul. I mean, this is why I wrote the second book, because the genius groove, because that's all about when you really go through these experiences to understand what's happening in the moment. So if you get in the moment that there's something unfolding, something bigger, it may be really horrendous, but it's really, really helped me, and it helped me to get into what I'm calling the genius groove, you know, my real creativity, what I'm really here to do. And sometimes to get onto your right path, it has to be something big like that. And, you know, and just the second book was about, you know, this is what's happening. If this is going on with you, you're being called to do something bigger maybe. Or, you know, if something inside you is just yearning and don't feel you're in the right job or career, you know, follow that call. because when you do, the universe starts to unfold, and it's amazing what can happen. I mean, with me, it was pretty dramatic, but, you know, it did just totally open up my life. I just, you know, doing amazing things now that I would never have done before if I'd stuck in and been a GP.
So you can either pay your bills or change the world. I think you made a good decision.
Well, that's the other strange thing. People worry about money. How are you going to pay the bills? Me included. I was, you know, how's the mortgage going to get paid? It's been quite amazing how things have come at the right moment. It's, you know, the coffers have been low. I'm not going to lie to you many times. But, you know, it's the abundance. I move beyond the system and the money and into the abundance. And that's a different vibration altogether. And so I think people are, you know, still in the box. They're so worried about it. If you really have that calling to move on, you know, there really is this abundance vibration. And I was just as fearful as everybody else about what would happen if I lost my job. It's been nothing short of miraculous what can happen if you really follow the true path. And
I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, I think my PayPal account got cancelled. So over 3 years, I think we've been trying to gain subscribers for like $5-$10 a month or whatever people are willing to donate, just so I can keep doing what I'm doing with this radio show, right?
Yeah.
And then that gets cancelled. The account gets frozen and I can't access it for 180 days. So I've got 3 years worth of income that's coming in suddenly disappeared. And I think within a couple of days or something, I had all these donations pouring in into my bank accounts and into the new PayPal account. And I think just as little as yesterday, I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm so totally screwed, or there's no money anywhere. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I look in my account this morning, and suddenly there's enough money to pay the rent this week.
Wow.
And it's not an isolated incident either.
No.
It happens regularly.
And what's so amazing is it's always enough. It may not be, you know, the riches or whatever. But, you know, when you really need something, you get enough, and it sometimes comes in such amazing forms that you never would have predicted. It's true. I mean, it's kind of like I'm just the same as everybody else. It's hard to let go and get your sort of ego mind around it. But, you know, I kind of... Once I was forced to let go of my job, you know, the amount of times that sort of thing has happened to me as well. And it's true, it really does happen. So you're obviously doing the right thing in life.
Now that's what's interesting, is because people get paid by other people to do things that they hate, to do a job that doesn't make much of a difference in the world. And yet, when people do the direct opposite of that, when they work for, you know, like the greater humanity, et cetera, as I like to call it, the universe just gets the frack out of your way.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, bro, I'm sorry that you've had to suffer for goodness knows how long working for a boss who doesn't understand you or doing a job that doesn't thrill you. And now that you're doing something that thrills you, helps people, and makes the world a better place, suddenly you don't need that whole riches and glamour story, because your life itself becomes the glamour. The magnanimous nature of the universe becomes your jewelry.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're doing it if you've got a penny or you've got a lot more than that. You know, it's absolutely true, yeah. So, you know, so that's part of the reason why I wrote the second book, to be an example. So I've told my story in public about my family, and because I thought, you know what, this might help people who are worried about, you know, going for it or wonder what might happen. You know, just to tell my story may help some people. And, you know, people write to me about my story, which was a bit nerve-wracking, you know, because, you know, of my family and everything, and the personal nature of it all. But it has really, people have written to me from around the world and said that they've appreciated that and it's helped them. So that's really amazing. And I think, you know, just as you told this story, it's like just to be that example just gives people the courage to go do it themselves, you know. So, you know, I've ended up in a completely different place career-wise than I thought I'd be. I mean, you know, as I said, I'm not a physicist. But it's come to me, and, you know, I think this is what's happening right now. It's like people who are unexpected out of academia, out of the norm, are bringing information through them and they have to do it because the academic world is stuck, you know. So sometimes it's completely unexpected where you end up. But you've got to follow that genius groove, as I call it.
Genius groove. Hey, and speaking of which, another thing that occurred to me is that your social life completely opens up in a different way. Like, you were talking before about how your professional career and your personal career, you tried to separate them or do them both at the same time. And I tried to do that as well. Like, I got two Facebook accounts, one for my personal stuff and one for my, you know, activism and exposing scumbaggery and what have you. And I found out over a number of years that suddenly my
interest in what your passion is, and yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Manjura from punkscience.com. That's punkscience.com. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Just a few minutes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Due to technical difficulties, we're doing this interview via phone, and it's actually given me the opportunity to experiment. You know how every crisis you can turn into an opportunity, as the Chinese character would suggest? I've always toyed with the idea of filming myself properly with my little HD camera while doing my radio shows instead of just with the webcam, which occasionally freezes and such. So, yeah, we'll see how this episode comes out. My very special guest is Dr. Manjura Samantha Lawton from punkscience.com. Now, we were talking in the previous segment about, well, life changes, really, how your life changes. And it's my opinion that really you don't really change a hell of a lot in a lot of cases without some form of trauma to motivate you. Like, it's the very reason why you change. In the first place, it's like you're adapting to a new type of living, and usually adaptation happens because the previous environment that you lived in, which allowed you to survive, no longer exists. Dr. Manjura, welcome back.
Hi.
Now, if you have some great wisdom that you'd like to offer people, just from your personal experience, anybody who's wanting to get into these type of fields or anybody who's currently part of the establishment but knows that something's wrong and wants to get out of it, what kind of advice would you offer them?
Oh, gosh. I think really, really, if you really want to know who you are authentically, then I think you have to really watch what you eat, like in what your consciousness eats. You know, so really be aware of, you know, what you're taking in from the media and, you know, what sort of messages. I think I can't, you know, go into a lot of environments now. I've been news-free for about over 10 years. And it amazes me that people just are taking in what they're told. I mean, even, you know, even a show like this, if you're watching this sort of show, or if you listen to this sort of show, like, non-stop, like all the time, you know, maybe just cut down a bit, you know, and it's great that people are getting informed, but take some time out to actually find out what your authentic self actually is. what is the wisdom within? What is the voice of your own self? And, you know, one of the huge, huge things that people miss out are emotions, because that's what really got me through to actually understand that at the end of the day, if something happens in your life, there's something, there's a lesson in there. There's some sort of reflection that you can gain from that. There's some sort of insight about yourself that you can gain. I mean, something extraordinary happened through that whole process with the General Medical Council. When I was going to that, you know, I said one of the psychiatrists was not very nice to me. Before I went to that appointment, a dark line appeared on my neck. Now I've got brown skin anyway, but there was a browner line that appeared on my neck. And it was really bizarre. And I thought, there's something going on here to do with a past life that where I've been hung as a witch. It actually appeared and manifested on my neck. And so I was sort of reenacting and reliving some sort of past life scenario. And, you know, sometimes when something happens, it's triggering or you're reliving or something from your own emotional subconscious self, which doesn't have to be just as life. It can actually go back to past lives. And if you actually do the work of what I mean by do the work, the way that I do it a lot of the time when it's not, I'm coming up against something that's bothering me, and I can't figure out what it is, taking that time and just withdrawing into yourself and listening to your own wisdom, often you've got the answers within you. So either type or write or just even just take some time to actually listen to that wisdom. Once you start to connect with that, and to do that often you have to shut down some of the sort of fear-based media. Once you connect with that, you know, the real self will really start to emerge. So that's one of the most powerful things that I've found works in my life. So
I completely concur. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to understand yourself better, switch off the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Do it now.
I wonder how many people have done that.
I don't know. We've probably got like two or three people listening to it. Anyway... the other element here that I really thought was quite brilliant about what you said there as well is that everybody's got their own answers within them innately. And I think that was a mistake that I made earlier on in my career is going out and expecting somebody else to have the answer, expecting somebody else to be able to solve my problem, expecting somebody else to help me get into my career path of choice, you know, that kind of thing. When you're expecting everybody else to do all your thinking for you and all your actions for you, how much control over your own life and mind do you really have?
It's when you think about how we're educated, it's no surprise we're told from, you know, when we're very young, we're trained and indoctrinated into somebody else knows better than you. And one of the things that I've done in my life is also looked at the subject of spiritual children. And I was one of the I was organized some of the first conferences around the world. Well, it was based in England, but it was one of the first conferences of the world that actually took the subject of spiritual children and holistic education seriously. Because a lot of the kids nowadays, I don't know if you've heard the term indigo kids.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there's these, and it wasn't really my subject. My subject was science, but I found myself. A conference, sitting with a lady that I just met her once before, and we sort of met at this conference, and this massive great angel, I kid you not, hit me over the head, hit her over the head, and knocked our heads together and said, get on with it. And it sounds really bizarre, but I mean, this is my world. I live a multidimensional reality. And a lot of people, I mean, I saw a friend walk past when we're in this moment, and actually put my hand right in front of him, and he swears he did not see me at all. It's like we went into another dimension for a while. And when we were in that sort of different frequency, we were talking about, well, we've been brought together, what we're supposed to do. And we ended up doing these conferences on holistic children and indigo kids and highlighting all of those things. Because so for a while, I was known around the world as Dr. Indigo. It's like, even though it wasn't really my subject, you know. And but I'm glad that I did it. I'm very proud that we did it because it was highlighting that, you know, the way that we educate children is just, you know, we're just stuffing information into them. And, you know, when you've got kids now who are remembering past lives, who are, I met this 15-year-old girl who was not only, she'd written loads and loads of books in a script that nobody could recognize. Nobody knew what it was. And she was just said, I don't know where I'm getting it from. And she had a particular name for it. And she could remember all sorts of things about this planet. And, you know, she didn't know if there were memories or she was channeling. She didn't know. She just had a lot of information. She'd been writing it down since she was about 5 years old, her and her sister. And she could sing in this language. And nobody else could interpret this language. But if she made a mistake writing it, she would cross it out. I mean, nobody else would know she had made a mistake. She knew it was a real language to her. So you've got this incredible, incredible new generation coming up. And I think, you know, people who are very cynical at the moment, going, you know, the world is, you know, terrible. There's, you know, everything's been tightened and tightened. The, you know, the powers that are controlling the planet are making everything tighter. Just, you know, have a look at these indigo children and really listen to them. And you'll see that there's a different consciousness that's coming up. They're not in the majority, but, you know, there's more of them, and they're more convinced of who they are. A lot of kids start off spiritual, and then they end up, you know, becoming talked out of it because of their education and that sort of thing. But the indigos are different. They've got more of a sense of self. And they can actually stand up to adults and actually say, no, this is who I am. It's not a belief. It's actually, you know, my identity. So it's not a hobby. Spirituality with them is not a hobby. It's actually who they are. So, you know, that, looking at them and seeing that one day they will be the ones that are you know, in the positions of, they'll be in the positions of power in politics or whatever, you know, you know, I think the world has to change when these kids grow up, as the more of them come through. So I think there's a huge evolution going on, and you know, this sense of self and going within. You know, we're taught not to do that, but the more that these kids are sort of going to grow up, I think the more that that's going to be the norm.
Well, my question is, how many of these children are going to survive having these abilities after they've been forced into public education that denies any of these things exist? Because I found you can convince children of lies very easily a lot of the time, and they simply get things hammered into them, and they forget who they are. They forget their abilities and things. And there's all sorts of strange things that kids do. If kids are saying things that you don't understand, write down that thing that you don't understand, and then a couple of years later, suddenly it'll pop out at you and go, oh, my God, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. And my girlfriend, her niece, Caitlin, they were driving past a graveyard one day, and Caitlin was waving out the car to the graveyard going, hi, everybody.
Wow.
And the adults in the car are going, what? You know, and that's the funny thing, isn't it? Adults think we know everything, and we think the kids know nothing, but in a lot of cases, it's the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. And what used to happen in cases like that is that they would get it hammered out of them. And you know, what seems to be happening now is that, we're, you know, children under three, you know, as soon as they start to talk, they start, you know, quite a few kids will talk maybe about, you know, something strange, seeing spirits, past lives, and then they used to grow out of it. What we're seeing is they're not growing out of it, and it's staying with them in school. I even was approached when I was doing a talk in London by a group of medical students, and they came up to me and they said, we're looking for a doctor who understands, you know, what we're about. And they had started a healing clinic in a nightclub. Like, these are people who've gone through the whole of the educational system, and we're in their mid-20s, and yet they still had this sense, even though they were in med school, of who they were. and they got the lecture from, I introduced them to some more doctors, working doctors, and they got the lecture from them saying, you're going to lose all this, you're going to get onto the wards, and you're going to forget all your spirituality, you're going to forget all about healing and being holistic, it's going to be all drummed out. And they politely listened, and then when he left, they said, we're not going to lose this because this is who we are. And, you know, to get to in their 20s, having gone through such a rigorous educational system already, and be in the medical profession and still be in touch with all of this stuff, with the dimensions, with all this spiritual knowledge, you know, they're medical students. They're the doctors of the future. You know, so, you know, it's happening in all sectors. So it's not the majority yet, but we're going to start to see changes as these kids are growing up.
Well, and also what some people have told me is that there's a generational ruling class kind of thing, like whoever's about maybe 40 to 50 years old or whatever, that tends to be the ruling people who get elected into politics and yeah. and what have you, the 40 and overs, basically. What I've really hoped is that maybe there'll be a generation someday who actually grows up, goes through 4+ decades of experience, and doesn't have their hope, creativity, and wisdom wiped out by the current society, and actually leads society into something better.
From what I've seen, it's like, they can't be any different. They actually, it's like the vibration that they are representing. And, you know, we know from physics, you know, string theory, everything is vibration, you know, and vibration says resonance, you know, so like attracts what like, you know, and that applies to our own atoms as well. So, you know, we have these beings of different frequencies and different abilities. I mean, I tell you, I sat in general practice and had to prescribe Ritalin type drugs to little children, and it absolutely killed me, because myself being a mystic, myself being psychic, I could tell that some of these kids were actually really, really quick at picking things up and actually could read thoughts. And it was very difficult to sit there and do my job and medicate when I could see that this was what was going on. And so these abilities and these different frequencies and resonance, they're going to create automatically through resonance, create a different world. And I'm not sure it's going to be the world of politicians, you know, because, you know, we you know, on this show, you probably discuss it a lot, what's really going on behind politicians. And, you know, the kids don't see the same structures.
Yeah, well, thank goodness for that, because they don't really exist. Hey, what was it? You're not supposed to build your house on sand because it doesn't accommodate any structure. But that's basically what politics has become. It's been about a perpetual sandcastle model. Let's build something that will no longer exist. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong, sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated, organized crime, the police...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about more murder, incorporated, and organized crime. The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Hey, and, here's another element that I'd like to ask you, Dr. Mangia, is the future. I don't know about you, but I'm a big sci-fi nut myself. And the thing that impresses me most about things in sci-fi movies is the possession of technology that we don't currently have or even have an inkling of how it works. And I'm wondering, through the discovery of true science with actual facts and things of that nature behind it, what kind of technology, what kind of devices and things like that will we be capable of creating? How much more potential in terms of exploring the universe or even exploring inside the very human mind and soul how much more potential could we possibly have if we were to adopt a whole new approach to science itself?
Oh, wow, that's a really good question. There's so much in there. I think there's, this black hole principle that I've, was talking about earlier and is central to the work that I'm now doing, why I had to leave all the old world behind and go into this new path. But quantum physics, I know you did a show on this with Anthony Peake recently, that consciousness is fundamental to reality. So the whole theory is based on the fact that you can't see the black hole because it's beyond what you call the perception horizon. You can't see the higher dimensions because it's beyond normal perception at the speed of light. So we call that the speed limit of the universe when it's actually just a reflection of the limitations of the vibrations of this dimension, of the perception of this dimension. We know that photons go faster than the speed of light. You know, they have no mass and they have no speed, really. You know, we know that light can go faster than the speed of light. It's just that our world, the world of mass and charge and density, that has its limitations to the speed of light. 98% of the universe is out there beyond our normal perception. You know, what if we were to realize that we don't have the whole picture? You know, it's the speed of light isn't the limit at all. And even Einstein started to say that in his own lifetime. And people turned around and said, but that's the law. You can't break the law. And he goes, well, I kind of made that law. You know, so even he wanted to break that rule. And as I said, you know, there's some orthodox physicists who are breaking that rule. What sort of technology would come out of it if we realized that there's infinite potential in every single part of the universe that's bringing through this amazing, this gamma ray burst that they can't understand where this power is coming from? If you really understood the dynamics, imagine the technology that could come out of it. So that's the first level, but it's just the science, you know, leading on to it. If you have new science, you can have new engineering. You know, first of all, you've got to have the theory and the new understanding of the universe before you can make the technology. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, just as you were saying, what about the mind? So once you understand that consciousness is fundamental and that there are many dimensions to the universe, and this is science, you know, how freeing is it? People are so stuck in their box of 3D reality, and there's a reason that there's news every day that's telling you to keep in fear. Because if you are in fear, if you don't understand what's been done to your own emotions, that you're being kept in fear all the time, because if you just understood just how many dimensions your being lives in, you know, that you can actually shift your awareness beyond the speed of light to the infinite potential of who you really are, that you are this amazing interdimensional being that can interact with other dimensional beings. I tell you, there are many, many beings on this planet, non-human species. I've seen them. And they are constantly walking around. They're in many, many different frequencies. They don't want you to know that, because if you knew that, you wouldn't keep a docile person. If you understand the physics, the science, that consciousness is fundamental, there's many dimensions to the universe, and start embodying that, move out of the fear frequency that everybody's intent on keeping you in, then you can actually start to expand into these dimensions. Make sure you keep grounded, you don't lose yourself there, but, so you can actually expand into these dimensions and maybe even interact with these dimensional beings. There's so much more to the universe than we're told, and we're kept like that quite deliberately.
This is a concept that's been repeated for a long time, you know. You got to work to feed the soul, as it were. And my perspective is, well, actually, it depends what you're working on. If you're working for somebody else, for something that doesn't matter, it doesn't feed your soul at all. It actually feeds on your soul. It does a direct opposite. to what's meant to be happening. And it's the same thing with almost every current, cliche of how to live a healthy life really is, for me, it's just complete opposite land. It doesn't matter what your employment status is. It doesn't matter whether you're a manager or a company or the clerk of a company. You can. It doesn't have much of a bearing on what kind of a person you are. And it's only once you realize your own limitless potential that you can actually become something better. It has nothing to do with how many promotions you've received or what titles you hold.
Yeah. The labels that we put on ourselves, and, you know, certainly what happened to me and probably, you know, made me have to stand there without the label of a career. And, I worked on Punk Science for 4 years without any publishing contract or anything. And people would ask me, what do you do? People always ask you, what do you do? And if I say, well, I'm writing a book, they go, well, have you got a publisher? And I'd say, no. And they go, well, you're not a writer then. And, you know, so I was in this, like, in-between stage where I wasn't working as a doctor and I didn't have a publisher. And I was, like, had to face myself. You know, just me without any labels. And that's frightening. But when you start to do that and say, I'm not just this person who's my... I'm not an accountant. I'm not... You know, I am me, you know, and just start to face yourself. It's actually hugely liberating. But we're so fearful that we have to have that label. And I know what that's like. And, you know, at the end of that 4 years, when the book was ready, not when I was ready, but when the book was ready... the publisher appeared. You know, everything happened in the perfect timing. So, yeah, it's going beyond those labels and going beyond this box. I mean, there's a lot attempting to keep you there. And one of the biggest things that people don't take account of is your emotional body is absolutely key. If you are feeding on a frequency of fear, the emotional body actually eats. Just like anything else. And if you are constantly munching, allowing it to munch on fear, you're going to keep yourself disconnected from source. And there's lots of things trying to keep you there. It's kind of like feeding horizontally instead of vertically. So once you shift your feeding of your emotional body and start to connect direct to source, you know, the Gnostic Gospels even say this. They say that when the Archons, you know, David Icke talks about the archontic universe, and when the Archons actually created these clay figures and called them human beings and got them to be their slaves or whatever, there's one thing that they didn't count on, and that was Sophia, the goddess, and some accounts is Sophia's mother, who put the divine spark in humans. And that divine spark is something that Archons cannot take away. It's right there in the ancient scriptures that no matter what they're doing to control you, every human being has that direct connection to the source. You know, call it the center of the black hole, call it whatever. It's that infinity. And that cannot be taken away from you. They can try and distract you from that. But, and you know, using fear and use whatever emotions. But once you start to realize and connect yourself, you're actually going to connect to the sort of interdimensional. And once we realize that this, you know, like the Plato's cave, you know, that this isn't all there is. These are just shadows. There's so, so much more. There's 98%. You know, this is scientific fact. Cosmologists, standard model of cosmology, is 98% of the universe is not known about. Dark energy and dark matter. Once you realize that we're only seeing a tiny sliver of reality, you know, both at a consciousness level and in, you know, just orthodox physics even says that, you know, you can start to expand your mind beyond the speed of light. Your consciousness is massless. It can go beyond the speed of light. Your matter might not be, but your consciousness can. You can actually expand and become that multidimensional being.
Yeah, and I think it really encourages you to be very humble if you know that you don't know anything. The man who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing. And the man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough. A very special guest, Dr. Manjeet Samantha Lawton from punk.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check out her Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in, and we'll see you again sometime at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Why? Because it's the most important question, allegedly.